Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Alright, making this video a second time. I don't know what happened the first time. Things are a little buggy, so I probably should do a reboot before doing this video, but we're going to try to do it without it. So comments, I believe. A couple of comments should be there. There they are. Some rude ones. But whatever. These people who, they have to threaten you because, you're saying something you don't like? Gee. Grow up. But anyway. All right, so this is a reasonable subject. Well, the one comment, the force that surrounds us and penetrates us, it binds the galaxy together. Yes, of course. Some things stated in Star Wars are poetic and meaningful. Yoda saying there's only do or do not do. There is no try. Little pieces of wisdom, I would say. I would agree that there's something to be learned or gleaned from storytelling. But, as soon as they start doing this stuff, I'm going to start manipulating the force with, the palm of my hand. No, you're not. The idea that thoughts are somehow doing this penetrating and manipulating is just a pile of crap. obviously, the shape of an idea in your brain is not transferable. If I hate, there isn't like hate vibrations that are any different than love vibrations. That's just too ridiculous. And even if there were, even if there actually was a way that you could actually physically say the neurons making a hate emotion are somehow doing something shape different than the opposite, the effect is going to be so, the amount of energy reflecting in the universe, that pattern is so weak, that you wouldn't be able to receive it 10 inches away. But anyway, those are all kind of physics arguments that you might as well not make in the middle of the babble that people want to talk about. But anyway, so the comment above that is more direct. If charge is separate from these other forces, so again, charge isn't separate. I don't know why you would think I'm saying it's separate. It's all this, there's only one force circumstance. Now, electrons are essentially living in a world where they're only moved by the electron force, and protons are only moved by the proton force. It's the only thing that's pressurizing them, causing them to do anything. And the other force, they're completely inert to, but they do change the force, which means they have an effect on the force. So that's the interaction, that's the interplay between the force and the matter. The force can't be changed unless it interacts with a piece of matter. And the matter is only existing in half the universe. The electron only sees half the universe, you could argue. And the proton only sees half the universe. I could say that's the proposed fact. So anyway, then would this model of a strong force, so there's no strong force, there's just the fact that you can mitigate against the existence of the force by putting something that makes it disappear in between you and it. So I could put something between me and the camera that makes me disappear. Okay, depending on where I put it, I can make me disappear. Okay, there, I don't exist anymore because of this arrangement. And so the electrons and protons are playing that game with each other. Two protons can be made invisible to each other by sticking an electron between them, and then they just can't see each other, and if they can't, out of sight, out of ability to affect me. So now they are capable of getting very close to each other as long as they keep an electron between them. That's the simple explanation for how you make charges get closer to each other than they theoretically should be able to get to each other because of their tremendous capacity to create reflective energy. So because the energy is changed as it goes, transitions through these objects, essentially it's negated as a force, relevant to either one or the other. Okay. But the deeper part of this, okay, let me just read further. Then this, would this model of the strong force be affected when the atoms are deep underground? So this gets to sort of like a pressure argument. Like, is there any way you can mitigate against the universe and its pressure? So the argument is that every little object is being affected, okay, by the fact that it's in a universe that essentially doesn't like it. You know, I mean, it's just constantly hitting it with stones. And the fact is that it essentially is at equilibrium, as long as it's not moving, with that field. That is, whatever hits essentially comes, either goes through it, or it reflects it. So it's always giving back whatever it's getting, except in the circumstance where it moves, where it actually keeps the piece of the stone and continues to move with the stone's energy at a slower speed. So it's not like it's destroyed it, it's just reducing its speed, and then it will eventually, you know, release it again at some time later when it stops. Okay, anyway. All right, so in such a universe, would there be any way of shielding against the pressure? So you could have a whole bunch of Earth. And so this guy's argument basically is could I create an absence of pressure by putting a shield of Earth that stops the pressure from getting to something? But it really can't do that, because the pressure is in the atoms now. So when it hits the first atom, it's pushing it into the other atoms. You know, atoms are going to push on each other, so you haven't eliminated the problem. So you have two ping pong paddles and you have a ball bouncing between them. You could sort of
I really don't want to do this video a third time. Oh, god damn, that was stupid.
Alright, sorry for...
So this is the equilibrium part, okay? Much force going in is coming out.
You know, this is the Earth part, here's the ping pong paddle part, okay. So the simple argument is, you know, okay, there's energy bouncing back and forth. What keeps the paddles from moving? Well, the external force. So there's always going to be an equilibrium in terms of the external force that's going to dictate where the position of the paddles is. So there has to be enough force pushing this way to compensate for the number of interactions the force is having in here. So you could have only one force bit in here, but it can create a lot of pressure because it can bounce back and forth very, very fast. So the pressure is always going to be equalized by the existence of the electrons and protons, because they can only get so close to each other, and that's the end, okay? But they're never really going to... Probably you're not going to reach pressures except for like in neutron stars or something, where you have electrons and protons actually, you know, without any energy between them, you know, where you've somehow extracted all of the ping pong balls, and so now the paddles can get right next to each other. Because as long as there's some force in between, that force is only going to magnify as you bring the paddles closer together. You just increase the number of impacts completely consistent with whatever's pushing against it. So the more you push, the faster the ball bounces back and forth, because the closer the paddles get. So you always have something compensating or absorbing the pressure. And that's what the atoms are doing next to each other. So you can't undo this external pressure, because in here, you're just changing what's in the form of just force bits hitting into matter actually moving, electrons and protons getting closer and closer to each other. So you're really stuck with the pressure. So then you could create like a vacuum chamber, and that's even not going to save you, because you can sort of understand that, yeah, you can pump all the atoms out of here, okay? So you have atoms in here, and you have atoms out here, and obviously these walls are made out of atoms, okay? And you've taken all the atoms out of here. Well, taking the atoms out, they're just a way of exchanging energy. So the atoms are just, you know, you throw them at somebody at a velocity, that's temperature. And, you know, if the ones hitting are at a higher velocity than the ones leaving, then you're going to add heat, and if the inverse, you're going to subtract heat. So they'll just equalize the temperature. So it just makes it easy for the pressure here to equalize with the pressure here by sending bits back and forth. But it's going to equalize anyway, in the sense that this barrier isn't going to stay here unless I'm creating a counter pressure. So if I make a shield against the pressure going this way, I have to make the shield out of matter, and I somehow have to keep that matter from going, being crushed by the pressure. And the only way I can do that is by arranging matter next to each other, electrons and protons that have a strong incentive to stay connected to each other. And so the pressure is still going to be somewhere. It's going to be in the steel, or it's going to be somewhere, but it's going to be somewhere. You can't evade the pressure. And so there's really no way to pull all the energy out of something, realistically, in my opinion, except by creating a circumstance where, I don't want to really get into the nuclear physics, you know, the sun or something, but you can just understand that it's all just about proximity. So the more pressure there is, the closer the electrons and protons get, and the less pressure there is, obviously the further apart they would get. And really that's just going to equalize. So you really can't get rid of the pressure. And I guess you could understand that as soon as I make a vessel, I'm creating a shield, that it's going to have to be at equilibrium. So everything I shoot out is going to come back into me anyway, and it's going to get back to me sooner, so it's going to be more pressure. So if I was the only thing in the universe, everything that reflects off of me never comes back, or it doesn't come back for a billion years until it hits something a billion light years away. But as soon as I put something else in proximity, well, now I'm going to get the reflection much sooner. So that's the added pressure. So as long as I'm in a universe with other stuff in it, it's essentially creating a shield that doesn't allow me to be at equilibrium, in the sense I receive energy, you know, from the external universe, and I can't get rid of it without it coming back and hitting me again, because it keeps reflecting off the other matter in the environment. So there's lots of dense matter. So the density of matter is thicker inside. The deeper I go into the earth, the denser the matter gets. Therefore, the more I'm going to have a hard equilibrium problem, because all of the energy I'm excreting is ending up coming back to me sooner. So I'm not going to be in a less pressure environment. I'm going to be in a higher pressure environment. I can't escape the pressure. This is the argument. You can't really escape it, because the matter is going to be moved by it. And so all the matter I'm in proximity to is going to achieve an equilibrium. And the only way it can achieve the equilibrium is there has to be as much pressure on the inside as there is on the outside. From its perspective, pressure in either the form of direct force are in the form of indirect force, that is, moving paddles closer together. It's a really deep subject, and I'd love to simulate all of this, but, you know, you first have to start with the force bits and the matter bits, and, you know, and you keep moving up, and it's like trying to put an elephant and a grain of dust in the same camera frame. You know, it's just impossible to do. If you can see the dust, you can't see the elephant. If you can see the elephant, you can't see the dust. So, you know, so it takes, you know, a very well-constructed simulation for you to be able to go from human scale, you know, to electron scale, and do it accurately representing every activity that was happening in that little segment of space. I mean, you know, that's the ideal, right? Instead, you know, I stick my finger out, you see me, and then I stick my finger out, and it zooms in, and it sees every atom moving in my finger. You know, that's, you know, it's doable, but it's not easy to do. All right. So, the next subject, a little bit on Faraday, I think. Well, the Faraday paradox. I hope this is recording. It says it's recording. It better be recording. All right, I should be back. So the Faraday paradox, just, you know, the simplest form of it is, okay, I just have a wire, piece of wire, and I can rotate it. Okay, so I can make the wire go in 360 degrees kind of rotation. All right, so that's the idea. Or I have a magnet with one pole faced in a direction. So the south pole's down here, and I just show the pole this way, and I can spin the magnet, okay, on that axis. Now, we know if I turn the magnet this way, you know, and I spin the magnet, you know, with its north pole and its south pole, and I spin it with the poles changing, well, we know that's going to create induction everywhere. So any wire anywhere in the environment is going to pick up on that. But spinning on its axis, well, that's another question. And it really has to do with this idea that there are field lines, using Faraday's terminology, are lines of force. Now, I argued that, you know, unfortunately, these two things have been confused. So I could use Maxwell's drawing of a charge as an example, okay, where if he had a plus charge, he would say the charge is emanating, okay, straight lines of force. And what you're really just talking about is the intersection of those lines. So if I had a positive charge and I had a negative charge, okay, both are doing the same thing. And what you really just want to do is measure the contact, the change where these lines meet or intersect. And you could argue there's going to be places where it's equal distance, okay, where the force from the positive charge pushing something away is equalized by the force on the other side, okay, where the push has been negated and it's going to be attractive. And so you could draw a bunch of lines, okay, that would represent what a charge would do if you placed it, a positive charge or a negative charge, and you could draw lines. Now those lines, nothing's traveling those lines, okay, nothing's moving on those lines. Those are just lines of orientation, you know, and where's the next step? And the same thing can be done with a magnet. So you can, you know, you can have a magnet and create these, the illusion of these field lines. I guess I might as well keep the colors consistent. Oh, you can barely see that. Well, that's tough. All right, north, south, and then they have these lines they draw, you know. Those lines are just orientation lines. Those aren't the actual lines of a physical real force. Nothing's flowing on these lines. Nothing's going from the north end to the south end along these lines. These lines are just being created because you're creating a bunch of south-north magnets here. So the original magnet causes the iron filings to become magnetized. They orient to the original magnet that created the magnetism in them, of course. This is the magnet that was strong enough to create the magnetism in the iron filing. The iron filing just orients in the opposite direction, and it ends up creating a bunch of new magnets that are oriented south-north instead of north-south. And so, obviously, that difference, okay, each one of these field lines just represents the fact that these are where magnetism is lining up in the opposite orientation to the original magnet. So these are obviously repelling each other. And the only reason why you see them is because you're stopping them, you're stopping the filings from actually turning and just sticking to the magnet. You know, just creating, you know, lines coming out of the magnet that would also have the same syndrome in the sense they'd all be lined up the same. And therefore, that's why they create spikes. I mean, you get spikes on the top of magnets because the new magnets are lined up exactly opposite, and they're all the same. These are all going to be south-north, 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 south-north. So, of course, they repel each other. And the further up they go, right, the more they can take advantage of that separation by pushing out this way and this way. And so they just spread out. But there's nothing traveling any of these lines. These lines are completely arbitrary and are just created by the fact that the magnets are repelling each other. You can have these lines orient in any position in space. They can be here, they could be here, they could be here. Just depends on how small the filings are. The bigger the filings you use, the more filings you use, the bigger the spread in the lines. All right, anyway. So back to this idea that these lines are what's getting broken and that that's somehow the significant fact. So the fact is when I spin the wire, I get electricity. If I spin the magnet, I get no electricity in the wire. And that's the paradox, because, you know, Einstein had the problem with this too, because it's like, well, if relativity is true, and it doesn't matter which one's doing the actual moving, it just has to do with the difference in their positions, the change over time, then why should it make a difference? It shouldn't make any difference whether I'm rotating the magnet or I'm rotating the wire. And so that's the key thing. And so now, you know, the Chappelle Society is arguing it, and, you know, they're letting a certain position dominate that argument. And that position is that somehow this isn't a paradox, when it clearly is. Not just to Faraday, or not just to Faraday's theory. It's a paradox to relativity. It's a paradox to a lot of circumstances, and so it needs sort of to be explained. And the, I would argue, key to the explanation is sort of understanding it's a lot harder to rotate this smaller thing than it is this big thing. So the first thing you need to do is make them equal. So glue your wire to a big cylinder. Because a key problem would be moving closer and further. We know if I move the wire closer and further, I'm going to invoke Lenz's law. You know, I'm going to create eddy currents. I'm going to create magnetic breaking. So that's obviously going to induce, you would expect, induction if I move closer or further away. That's what magnets do all the time. So I can just stick a north side magnet and just poke at a wire, and I'm going to induce electricity. So if I bring it any closer or further, that's going to be induction. And so the point is that, you know, the magnets are usually big, and so they rotate smoothly. The wires are small, or the discs, and they wobble. And so you're any wobble in the wire, any unevenness, any imperfection in how it rotates would mean that it's moving closer and further away from the magnetic field, and that's inducing the electricity. So yeah, when you're spinning the wire, you have fluctuations in the distance between these two surfaces, and when you're spinning the magnet, you don't have fluctuations. So you have to really do experiments where you can eliminate any possibility that the surfaces are moving closer or further away from each other. And once you've done that, then you can say whether there's a paradox or not. Because I would argue that's an obvious defect. If there's anything in the spinning process that's uneven, where there's any bouncing, that's obviously going to cause induction. So that might be the simple explanation, because all the experiments do rely on high-speed spinning of discs, and, you know, all you need is a little tiny vibration, a little tiny moving closer and further as you're spinning, and you would induce the electricity. All right. So anyway, it's an interesting subject. I don't have any conclusions, just pointing out that, you know, they're talking around it. But the subject really is this paradox. You spin the magnet, nothing. You spin the wire, something. And you have to explain why that's possible. Because, frankly, almost everybody's theory, you know, is going to say it really shouldn't matter which one's spinning. All right, so I'll call that a video and such. Yeah, that'll do. So a little shorter than the first version. But anyway, and I'm tired now. Blah, blah, blah. So this has been DriveFysics.com, DebatePhysics.com also, but again, it's just impossible to find anybody who wants to debate any of these interesting subjects. I would argue kinetic energy and the whole two-slit photon stuff is even more interesting, but whatever. Can't get anyone to interact with any argumentation regarding what can be ruled out as a fact, and what has to be ruled in as a fact, and all of that kind of stuff. Nope. Nobody interested.